Life Talk Radio presents Health and Longevity, the program dedicated to bringing you cutting-edge information and interviews that can change your life. On each edition, nutritionist, registered dietitian, and board-certified anti-aging health practitioner, Dr. John Westerdahl, will show you how to achieve a longer, healthier life using the latest breakthroughs in nutrition, wellness, and lifestyle medicine. And now, here's your host, Dr. John Westerdahl.
Welcome to Health and Longevity. I'm Dr. John Westerdahl. More and more people today are adopting vegan-vegetarian diets. Health authorities regard well-planned vegan diets as safe and nutritionally adequate for people of all ages. Furthermore, research has confirmed that vegan diets protect against many chronic diseases and are remarkably effective in preventing, treating, and even reversing these conditions. In fact, a healthy vegetarian diet may well be the optimal diet for your health and longevity. Our featured guest today is registered dietitian Brenda Davis, the co-author of the new best-selling books, Becoming Vegan, Comprehensive Edition, The Complete Reference to Plant-Based Nutrition, and Becoming Vegan, Express Edition.
Welcome back to Health and Longevity. Do you have questions about nutrition, health, or longevity? This is your chance to have them answered. On each program, Dr. Westerdahl will choose a key question from our listening audience and respond to it on the air. Due to the high volume of emails, Dr. Westerdahl cannot personally answer each question on our broadcast. If you would like to submit a question, please go to our website, healthandlongevityradio.com. Once there, you will see a button to submit your questions. And now, the question of the day.
And our question for today is, what are the health benefits of pomegranates? Well, pomegranates have a rich history in art, medicine, and religion, and they have long been an important part of the Middle Eastern diet. Pomegranates were often ignored until research noted the fruit's possible benefits in the fight against prostate cancer. Increasing evidence indicates that pomegranates have a role in the prevention and treatment of prostate cancer. In 2006, University of California, Los Angeles study, for example, men with prostate cancer who drank 8 ounces of pomegranate juice daily showed a 12% decrease in cell proliferation and a 17% increase in cancer cell death. Pomegranate juice is an excellent source of three types of polyphenols, tannins, anthocyanins, and ellagic acid, all of which are potent antioxidants, and these substances have been associated with the prevention of heart disease and cancer. Pomegranate juice is heart healthy. A 2005 Preventive Medicine Research Institute study showed that 8 ounces of pomegranate juice consumed daily for 3 months improved the amount of oxygen that reached the heart muscles of patients who had coronary heart disease. So include more pomegranate foods in your diet.
And now, Health and Longevity's special feature, where Dr. Westerdahl interviews leading experts and personalities on vital topics important to your health and longevity.
And our special guest today on Health and Longevity is Brenda Davis. Brenda Davis is a registered dietitian. She is a leader in her field and an internationally acclaimed speaker. She has worked as a public health nutritionist, clinical nutrition specialist, nutrition consultant, and academic nutrition instructor. Brenda is the lead dietitian in a diabetes intervention research project in Marshall Islands. She is also a featured speaker at nutrition, medical, and health conferences throughout the world. And Brenda has co-authored 2 new books with her fellow dietitian, Vasanto Molina, who's been on our program before, and their 2 newest books is Becoming Vegan, Comprehensive Edition, and Becoming Vegan, Express Edition. Brenda has also authored and co-authored several articles for peer-reviewed medical and nutrition journals and magazines, and Brenda is the past chair of the Vegetarian Nutrition Dietetic Practice Group of the Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics, and in July 2007, she was inducted into the Vegetarian Hall of Fame. Brenda is also the co-author of other publications, but it also has a website called brendadavisrd.com, which is a rich resource for information on plant-based nutrition, as well as an archive of her articles and lectures. And Brenda lives in British Columbia, Canada, and I believe we're talking to her from there right now. Brenda, welcome to Health and Longevity.
Well, thank you so much, John. It's great to be with you.
And are you in Canada right now?
Yes, I am. I'm in Kelowna, which is about 4 hours east of Vancouver.
Oh, very good. Well, you and I have been friends, and longtime friends and colleagues for many years in the whole vegetarian area.
Yes.
And particularly with the Vegetarian Dietetic Practice Group of the Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics, which you were the chair. And I'll mention here for the first time on the radio program that I've been elected to be a future chair, a chair-elect right now, for the Vegetarian Nutrition Dietetic Practice Group, which is the organization within the Academy of Nutrition Dietetics of dietitians and nutritionists who specialize or have a particular interest in the area of vegetarian nutrition.
Yeah, well, congratulations, John. I think they're very fortunate to have you, and I hope you have a wonderful year.
Well, thank you. And as you know, there's a lot of work involved with that.
Yes.
So anyway, you know, Brenda, we have a lot of listeners on our program today that may have heard about vegetarian nutrition. They know a little about vegetarianism, but there really is a variety of vegetarian diets. And maybe you can go over those and explain where vegan vegetarian nutrition fits in.
Oh, it is so interesting because it wasn't so many years ago, maybe, I don't know, 10, 20 years ago, most people who were following a vegetarian diet were lacto-ovo-vegetarian, which means that they consume dairy products and eggs. And only maybe 5 to 10% were vegan. And vegans are people that consume absolutely no animal products. So there's no dairy products, no eggs, no, I mean, for both vegetarians and vegans, there's no gelatin or other sort of animal byproducts. But specifically, the eggs and the dairy are the big, you know, difference between lacto-ovo and vegan. So vegans choose to omit those. Today, actually, there was a poll done not long ago that showed that almost half, or I think maybe half or close to half, of all vegetarians are now vegan, which is just shocking. So the proportion of people that are choosing a completely plant-based diet just continues to increase.
Well, that word vegan is interesting because, you know, a lot of people hear that, they think, oh, what is that, someone from the planet Vegas? Or,
exactly.
Where does that term vegan really originate from?
Well, the term originated from way back in England. I think it was, you know, in the 1948 or something like that. A small group broke off from the vegetarian group, and this was a group that really got the connection between dairy and eggs and issues of or concerns about the treatment of the animals, and they felt that it was a more ethical choice to be completely plant-based than to be lacto-ovo. And so they broke off into their sort of own little group, and I think they called themselves sort of milk-free vegetarians or something for a while, and then decided to come up with a new name, and that's where the name vegan came. And Donald Watt lived to be, I think it was 94 or 95, and he never took any medications. He had a very healthy, long life, but we lost him just not so long ago.
Oh, wow. Now, let's pronounce that name right, because sometimes you hear vegan, sometimes you hear the word vegan. What's the proper term?
The proper term is vegan.
Right.
So, yeah.
And some vegans will actually, they're very interested in animal welfare, and that includes insects, like bees.
Right.
They won't even eat honey. Is that correct?
It's absolutely correct. And so the kind of bottom line for many people is they just want to contribute to pain, suffering, and death as little as possible. And they don't believe that animals are here to be used as resources for people. They believe that animals, including insects, have their own purpose. And so obviously, no matter what you do, even if you're growing vegetables, you're going to be killing insects. So there's only a certain distance you can go in terms of being completely animal-free, I guess, if you will. But in terms of honey, when people are, you know, raising bees to make honey, they feel that it's just wrong that we're, you know, these bees work so hard to make their sustenance for the, you know, to continue on in their population, and then we just kind of steal it and replace it with this sugar water.
Yeah, yeah.
And so it's this you know, bringing ethics to a different level, but there's a great controversy within the vegan world about that, because some people feel that when you eliminate honey or make it a prerequisite for being vegan, you eliminate a lot of people because they just think you're crazy. So there's quite a conflict within sort of the movement as to whether or not we should really be going to that length and just let people decide whether or not they want to consume honey. And so I said, to me, it's, you know, being vegan isn't really about being pure or absolutely 100%, because none of us really can be. There are bits of animal products in so many things that we use, including tires and all sorts of things, that, you know, computers and so on. We could never be really free of that. And I think all we really want to do is the best we can. And I don't think there's anyone going around as vegan police making sure that you're 100% pure. You just need to do the best you can. If that's your sort of goal for being vegan, is to reduce pain and suffering and death, then you just need to be conscious of things.
Right, because some vegans do, if they're not doing it for health reasons, that they all, and more animal compassion reasons, they don't wear leather and
right,
clothes that have any animal products in them.
Absolutely,
yeah.
And so that sort of a vegan lifestyle is and also they would avoid being involved with or going to performances where animals are being used for entertainment and that sort of thing.
Like aquariums and so forth.
Right.
Right. Now, let's talk about the health aspects of a vegan diet, though. What do you see as the advantages, like the vegan advantage, when it comes to our health and longevity?
Well, in terms of health and longevity, it's really very interesting, because most of our evidence comes from the Adventist Health Study. It came out in, I think Dr. Orlick, it was in 2013, put out a paper that showed that mortality rates were actually reduced by about 28% for vegan men and about 15% for all vegans, female and male. The males actually tend to, within the Adventist Health Study, tend to do a little better than the females. And I think it's because we're comparing health-conscious vegans and vegetarians with health-conscious meat eaters and fish eaters. And my guess is that the women within that cohort are probably all pretty health-conscious.
Uh-huh.
And their differences may be smaller than they are for men. So perhaps men who are meat-eating Adventist men are a little less health conscious than the meat-eating health conscious women. And a lot of Adventists, I find, especially that I know, even if they're not vegetarian, they tend to eat more vegetarian-based foods than what the average person in the general population would.
Well, you know, one of the concerns some people have about vegan diets is that the nutritional adequacy of a vegan diet, that you're going to get all the vitamins and minerals and protein and calcium and some of these different things. Let's talk about the nutritional adequacy of a vegan diet particularly.
Yeah, well, you know, the issue with vegan diets, there have been a number of studies that have looked at nutritional adequacy. And, you know, one of the best resources I think that we have that's a reasonably, you know, comprehensive report, but small enough you can carry in hand to your doctor, is the position of the American Academy or the Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics.
Right.
And, you know, we go through and according to this very conservative organization, well-planned vegetarian diets, including vegan diets, are appropriate for people at all stages of the life cycle, even during the times when people are at higher risk, like pregnancy and lactation, infancy, childhood, adolescence, for athletes, and so on. And so they've looked very carefully at the nutritional adequacy and the studies that have been done on nutritional adequacy. And when people are planning a vegan diet appropriately, there's really not a whole lot of concern. The biggest concern, I would say, is probably vitamin B12. And that's, you know, really simple. It's because vitamin B12 comes from bacteria and it's in animal products, but we tend to be very careful about sanitation of the plants we eat. And so we're not pulling carrots out of the ground and just eating them with bits of dirt on them. And
right.
So B12 is an issue, and we have to get it from fortified foods or supplements, and or supplements, really. But it's not a big deal. One of the neat things I think about B12 is that the National Institutes of Health recommends that anyone who's over 50 years of age doesn't rely on animal products for B12, but that they rely on the same thing that vegans have to rely on, fortified foods and animal products, because in animal products, B12 is bound to protein, and it has to be cleaved off of the protein in order to be digested and absorbed. And a lot of people who are over 50 don't have the level of acid and the enzymes that, you know, enough enzymes to be doing that job very well. And so people who are vegan and who are used to having to supplement, they've been taking B12 supplements forever and they buy fortified foods. When they hit 50, they're actually at less risk than omnivores who think they're all set because they're eating animal products. And so vegans actually may have an advantage if they're careful vegans and are making sure they've got a source of B12. And things like protein and iron and zinc, and, you know, it's really a matter of some people, when they become vegan or become vegetarian for that matter, they kind of just drop the meat and the dairy and they don't replace it with nutritionally adequate or equivalent plant foods. Mm-hmm. And so you can't live off of, you know, bagels and pasta and expect you're going to be receiving optimal nutrition. You need to replace meat with, as you know very well, John, with legumes and with tofu and things that are rich in protein, iron, and zinc. And you need to replace milk with, dark green leafy vegetables that are low in oxalic acid and fortified soy milk and legumes and other foods that are rich sources of calcium. So we just, and I think part of the problem is that most of our nutrition education in North America is really geared towards omnivores. It's not geared towards vegans. And so vegans have to take it upon themselves to learn the sources of those nutrients and to make sure that they're incorporated into their diets appropriately. And that's really why Vasanto and I write the books we write, is we want to provide guides that help people at every stage of the life cycle and with any sort of challenge to put together a diet that actually works for them.
Yes, and that is a concern, because you do see maybe sometimes many of the people who are going vegan for compassion reasons may not have the health aspects of it.
And they're eating.
Right. I was a nutrition editor for a magazine years ago called Veggie Life Magazine, and all the recipes in there were vegetarian, of course, and most of them actually were vegan. And then we had a lot of vegans writing in, complaining about me, actually. They said, ever since Westerdahl became nutrition editor, all these recipes are becoming too healthy. And we're vegans because of animal reasons, and we want more vegetarian, vegan junk food recipes.
Oh, wow.
And that's not where it's at. And what I tell some of my vegan friends that take that position, I say, well, let's think about this. You're against animal abuse, right? They said, yes. Now, you are an animal, right? Yes. Well, if you're eating all this junk food and unhealthy foods, that's animal abuse.
Well, you know what I say, John, and it's a little bit of a different tact, but I tell people, if you really care about animals,
yep,
you do not want to be exhibit number one for why you shouldn't be vegan.
That's true.
And as soon as you blow it, you're the only vegan people know in your neighborhood, at your workplace, wherever you are, and they look at you and your health is failing, they're going to say, there is exhibit number one for why I need to eat meat.
Right.
And so you want to really prove a vegan diet is a good thing to do. You want to draw people in. You need to make the diet extraordinarily adequate. You mm-hmm. want to be the healthiest person in your workplace. You want to be the only person who's not on medication and who still has the energy they had when they were 20 at 60. You know, that's the person you want to be, because that's the person that people are going to look at and say, wow, they've got to be doing something right.
Right. That's good. Well, you have two beautiful books here, and I have to tell you, we got Becoming Vegan Comprehensive Edition, complete reference to plant-based nutrition. And this is published by the book publishing company. I have to tell you, there's over 600 pages in here. And then you have the Becoming Vegan Express Edition, which is a lot less pages. But
yeah, I think it's about 283 or something like that.
So someone that really wants to know everything about being a vegan, all the science and nutrition and, I mean, the real detailed stuff, they're going to want to go for the comprehensive edition.
And so we specifically wrote the comprehensive edition for people that want the details and the research, and it's fully referenced.
Yes.
So it's really geared towards dietitians and doctors and just people within the general population who like to know detail. And the Express Edition is for the general consumer who just wants to know what to do, a little bit about the scientific rationale behind it, but to be able to get through a book a little more quickly.
Well, that's great. Now, let's think of those Express Edition people that are listening right now. And summing up, maybe just give some key points. Someone's thinking, you know, I think I'd like to go vegan. Give some quick hints on how to make that change.
Well, I would say, you know, proceed slowly. You don't have to do it overnight. I think one of the reasons why people become vegan and then go back to meat eating again is because, you know, they just didn't do it very well. And so sometimes when you go overnight, you're not allowing yourself time to figure out what appropriate replacements are. You're not allowing your body time to adjust to the dramatically increased level of fiber intake and so forth. And so your body sometimes responds not so favorably. So start out slow and start out, you know, even some people start out one meal at a time. And breakfast can be a really easy meal to start with because you're replacing cow's milk with fortified soy milk or fortified almond milk. And I know fortified almond milk, you know, it contains 4 or 5 almonds per cup. There's not a lot of nutritional value there.
Right.
So what I do for people that would like to use, you know, almond milk instead of soy milk because they find they're eating so many servings of soy with soy milk and soy yogurt and soy, you know, veggie meats and tofu and so forth. Sometimes they prefer just to use almond milk so that they're not consuming so many servings of soy. And what I do there is I add about 3/4 to a cup of hemp seeds. If I buy a 2-liter container of soy milk, I blend it in with my Vitamix. I blend in the hemp seeds and then, you know, with a couple of cups of the almond milk, and then I pour it back into the container. And that boosts the protein and the nutrient content to be at least as good as soy milk. So you can do that. But so for breakfast, it's an easy enough switch from cow's milk or yogurt to, you know, non-dairy alternatives of those things. And then at lunch and dinner, one of the things that I think is easiest for people is to start out with your favorite recipes and look at vegan versions of those recipes. So if you love pizza or if you love spaghetti or whatever the case may be, look up vegan pizza, vegan spaghetti recipes on the internet and just see, or in books, and come up with some replacements for the family favorites, whether it's tacos or whatever, lasagna. I make a, you know, cashew cheese to replace cheese in lasagna, for example. There are replacements for almost everything. And then the other thing is to figure out how to incorporate legumes into your diet once a day, whether that's at lunch or dinner. And just, you know, just figure out a way, whether it's hummus at lunch or white bean, you know, spread or something like that, or soup, lentil soup or whatever, but to try to get them in once a day. And one of the best ways to learn to use legumes is by using ethnic recipes. And, this, you know, we don't traditionally use a lot of legumes in North America, but boy, people in Mexico and India and all sorts of other countries are masters at using these
right.
foods, and we can learn from them how to make them very tasty. And then the other thing is to really, really figure out for you how to up your intake of veggies, and especially non-starchy green leafy vegetables, and try to get your intake up to at least 5 or 6 servings a day of vegetables. and then at least three or four of fruits as well. And then the other thing I would say is to always, for vegetarians or vegans, to always include at least an ounce of nuts and seeds a day, because they are just loaded nutritionally with phytochemicals and antioxidants, and they've got all sorts of trace minerals that aren't necessarily as plentiful in some of the other plant foods. But not only that, they're our source of essential fatty acids, a really key source. And so to be sure to include, you know, the omega-3 rich choices like ground flax seeds and chia seeds and hemp seeds in the diet. And then they also are a good source of healthy fat that increases our absorption of all the fat-soluble nutrients, like the fat-soluble vitamins and phytochemicals. So that's really important too.
Great. Well, Brenda, thank you for being with us today. I just want to mention again the two books, Becoming Vegan, Comprehensive Edition, The Complete Reference to Plant-Based Nutrition by Brenda Davis and Vasanto Molina. And the other book, for those that want just a quick book to read to get started on a vegan diet, Becoming Vegan, Express Edition, The Everyday Guide to Plant-Based Nutrition. Both are excellent books, and I highly recommend them because they are also scientific. There's a lot of some vegan books out there and other vegetarian books that may not have all the science to back it up. And of course, Brenda and Vasanto are both registered dietitians specializing in vegan nutrition and vegetarian nutrition. So they have the latest scientific approach and healthy approach to going vegan. Thank you so much, Brenda, and keep up the great work.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much for having me, John, and you keep up the great work, too. I so appreciate all you do.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Now, some of our listeners have said that they have missed a show or would like to re-listen to a previous show of Health and Longevity. And if you would like to listen to past shows, go to our website at healthandlongevityradio.com. Again, you go to healthandlongevityradio.com.
To learn more about the books written by our guests and books written or recommended by Dr. Westerdahl in this program, please visit our website at healthandlongevityradio.com. There you can learn how to obtain your copy of these valuable and informative books. Search each page for yourself and see how you can live a happier, healthier, and longer life. Visit us today at healthandlongevityradio.com. Once again, that's healthandlongevityradio.com.
That's all for today's program. Remember to visit our website to listen to all our programs at healthandlongevityradio.com. Until next time, this is Dr. John Westerdahl wishing you the best of health and longevity.
This has been Health and Longevity with Dr. John Westerdahl, a production of Life Talk Radio. Join us again next week on the same station and time for Health and Longevity. The preceding information on this program has been general information about your health and is not to be taken as professional medical advice, nor is it intended to serve as a substitute for medical attention. Do not change your diet or exercise habits without guidance from your medical doctor, especially if you have health problems or are on medication. Do not change your medications without the advice and supervision of your medical doctor. If you have a medical condition, we encourage you to seek the consultation of a medical doctor experienced in dietary change and lifestyle medicine. And as always, we wish you the best of health.